what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host. For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential, hosted by Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. The Vital Life will expand your understanding of how to live life fully and joyfully by making conscious choices that promote and maintain vitality in all areas of your life. Now, here is your host, Dr. Carolyn Ross.
Welcome to The Vital Life Radio. Today I have guest Dr. Edward Abramson, who is an internationally recognized expert on eating and weight problems. His new book is It's Not Just Baby Fat, 10 Steps to Help Your Child to a Healthy Weight. And this book shows parents how they can encourage healthy eating and help their kids break away from TV and video games while promoting a positive body image. He is a professor emeritus of psychology at California State University and the former director of the Eating Disorders Center at Chico Community Hospital. Dr. Abramson is a clinical psychologist who's worked extensively with parents concerned about their children's eating and weight, and he is the author of 5 books and 25 scientific publications. So welcome to the show, Dr. Abramson.
Thanks for having me on, Dr. Ross. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. So I want to get started on this very interesting topic. As everybody knows, childhood obesity is a big focus in our country, along with adult obesity. And it's something that we don't know exactly how best to deal with. And, you know, for most adults have been on diets to deal with their weight problem. But you're saying that children who are overweight or obese shouldn't be put on a diet. Why is this?
Well, there's ample evidence that it actually backfires. One study that was done in Northern California followed high school girls from the first year of high school through the end of graduation. And they matched them for weight, and the girls who were on a diet actually gained more weight than equally heavy girls who weren't dieting. And dieting presents all sorts of difficulties for kids. So it really is not the best way of approaching a child's weight problems.
Well, you know, I think many parents feel that they have to do something, but sometimes parents aren't exactly sure whether their child is overweight or whether they're just going through getting ready to go through a growth spurt. How can you tell the difference?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent point. And in fact, many parents don't recognize when their kids are overweight. And it's not an easy judgment because kids grow at different rates. So, you know, it may be that a child is going to have a growth spurt later. The best way of doing it, and it's not foolproof, is the Centers for Disease Control has a website which enables the parent to put in the child's age, specifically in months, and the child's height and the child's weight, and then it will calculate what the BMI is for the child at that age, and then determine what percentile that child is at compared with other kids of the same age. And then it's typically defined as being obese if the child is at the 95th percentile for his age or higher, and if the child is somewhere between 85 to 95% percentile, then that's thought of as being at risk for being overweight. But it, you know, if you had to actually try and calculate that yourself, it would be really difficult. But fortunately, the CDC has a website that'll do all the calculations for you.
Well, I think it can be very confusing. I always tell a story when I talk on my speaking circuit about having three sons, and all three of them would have been described as, you know, chunky or husky, and, you know, buying husky clothes at some point in their life, usually around 13 and 14, somewhere in that neighborhood, they all looked kind of plump. And lo and behold, the following year, every single one of them went through growth spurts and, you know, in two cases went from about 5'2" tall to over 6 feet tall and thin and muscular. So had I become concerned and started, you know, trying to get them to diet, I think that would have been the wrong thing to do.
Right.
No, it wouldn't have helped, and it may have hurt. And a lot of I know in your book, and you and I both work in the eating disorder field, you talk about how many of these attempts to get children to lose weight can lead to eating disorders or, you know, the use of extreme methods for dieting.
Yeah, you know, it's particularly risky when mom is concerned about her own weight and has a history of going on diets or joining Weight Watchers or, you know, doing some other, taking some of the pills to try and lose weight. And then she becomes concerned that her daughter looks a little chunky, and so she, you know, decides that the two of them should diet together, or you know, they swap diets, or, you know, go to a program together. And that sometimes can really cause problems, because if you look at the history of young women with eating disorders, frequently there's a kind of a connection between mom's dieting and mom's concern about weight and their own maladaptive eating behaviors.
Yeah, and I noticed that many parents don't feel that they're, or they don't understand or recognize that their comments about their own body affect their children as well.
Yeah, and, you know, really, if mom is looking in the mirror and you know, making negative comments about her body, or constantly asking, "Does this make my butt look big?" or other kinds of concerns like that. What she's doing really is modeling a negative body image for her daughter. Her daughter then will start looking and saying, you know, "Does this make my butt look big?" And when teenagers especially become concerned about their weight, then they sometimes resort to extreme measures for controlling their weight, which is, you know, unhealthy.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, many parents do have valid concerns, and one of them is that we know that there's a lot of fat phobia in our culture, and there's quite a big bit of stigma against people who are overweight or obese, that, and they also know that their kids may get teased or bullied at school because of their weight or size. So how do you handle these very valid concerns that parents have, for example, about kids getting bullied at school?
Yeah, you know, that is really a tragedy. And sometimes kids who are being bullied or picked on because of their weight, they feel so embarrassed and humiliated that they might not even tell their parents that this is going on. You know, so I think a parent can ask, and then kind of an open-ended question, how are things in school, or something along those lines, and then just kind of listen to what the child is saying, and also observe, is a child tending to withdraw, because, you know, obviously if a kid is being bullied, then he or she is likely to pull away from other kids. But then it's helpful, I think, to discuss it with a child, and you can help your child deal with it. You know, one of the obvious things is to not respond. You know, if a child is being teased and then cries or gets angry or whatever, that kind of just reinforces the bully who's doing the teasing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, it's not tattling to tell a trusted adult what's going on. So a child could, for instance, tell the teacher that she's being subjected to humiliation in class.
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, also it's helpful for parents sometimes to encourage the child to get involved in other social activities, after school activities, join the Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts or a church group, because kids who are bullied or teased frequently withdraw, and then they tend to eat more. So if the parent can help facilitate social interaction with a child, I think that would be beneficial.
Well, I'm glad you said the latter, because I think one of the things that happens with bullying is that it does affect the child's self-esteem and how they feel about themselves and their body. And so I think another thing that helps is to have a parent who doesn't just focus on or doesn't focus at all on appearance, but talks about other things that the kid is good at or good qualities that they have, mm-hmm. and helps them to build their self-esteem in that way.
Yeah, one of the things that happens with eating disorders frequently is that anything that is negative going on typically in a girl's life, she then attributes to the fact that she's too heavy or something along those lines. And so we really do want to emphasize that life is more than just, appearance or weight.
Mm-hmm. And I always tell my eating disorder patients that body image concerns are never about their body. They really are a distraction from whatever else is going on in their lives. So we have a few minutes before our break, and I just wanted to talk about a question that I get or a comment that I get from parents all the time when I speak on this topic. And they feel that they're depriving their kids when their kids are not allowed to, quote unquote, have goodies or treats that the other kids have or get to eat at a junk food place or eat fast food. They feel it in some way that they are depriving their children. How do you address that concern?
Yeah, no, that's a very valid concern. If everybody is, if all his friends are stopping on the way home from school to have a Slurpee, what's the child supposed to do? Mm-hmm. I think the message that we really want to communicate with our kids is not never, but rather on occasion. Okay. And so rather than say, this is a bad food that we never eat, this is something that we reserve for occasional treats. And so if everybody else is having a Slurpee, okay, you can have a Slurpee. But then maybe cut back later on in the day.
And how do you define the difference between a treat and, regular foods? Because some parents feel that their kids should get treated every day, the milk and cookies after school kind mm-hmm. of deal.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to recognize that snacking is fine. I mean, if the child has lunch at 12 o'clock and dinner isn't until 7, he or she is going to need a snack sometime in the middle of the afternoon. But a snack is different from a treat. A treat is a food that you eat purely for an enjoyment. A snack is something that you eat because you're physically hungry. So I think it's perfectly okay to have fruit when you come home from school, or nuts are particularly good because they keep you feeling full longer, or some other relatively low-calorie snack, and then save the cookies for dessert, for instance, as a treat. And it's also helpful, I think, if you're going to be eating those high-calorie treats, to eat them when you're not hungry, because then you're less likely to binge on them.
Okay. Well, we'll be going to break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Ed Abramson talking about childhood obesity.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have your resolutions to lose weight fallen flat? Get serious about reaching your healthy weight and actually changing your relationship with food and your body once and for all. The Anchor Weight Management Program, developed by Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, is a unique whole-person approach to restoring your healthy body weight without sacrificing your joy in eating. This is a medically supervised, effective, safe, and realistic program. There are ongoing programs in the Denver area, or you can do the program at your own pace, in the privacy of your own home. For more information or to register, call 303-993-5468. That's 303-993-5468.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
To perform at your maximum potential, you need to have all aspects of your life working properly. On Mind, Brain, and Body, Dr. Michael John Kell will bring you honest, open discussions concerning your physical, mental, and financial health. If you're ready to find purpose and meaning in your life, tune in to Mind, Brain, and Body every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific. Mind, Brain, and Body on Voice America Health and Wellness. Radio dedicated to your health, wealth, wisdom, and purpose.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential with your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. If you have a question for Dr. Ross or her guests today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. If you prefer to send an email, you can reach Dr. Ross at vitalliferadio@gmail.com. Now back to The Vital Life.
Welcome back to The Vital Life, brought to you by Princess Know-It-All and the Noble Food Makeover. Healthy recipes, tips on beauty and style, and the true life adventures of a real American princess. You can learn more about Princess Know-It-All at www.princessknowitall.com. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Ed Abramson, who is a well-known expert on eating and weight problems. He has appeared on many national TV shows, including ABC News 2020 with Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York. He's also been interviewed on more than 50 TV and radio programs, including Hard Copy, Good Day, LA, Mornings on 2, and The Joan Rivers Show. He's the author of a new book, It's Not Just Baby Fat, 10 Steps to Help Your Child to a Healthy Weight. And you can learn more about Dr. Abramson and his books on www.dredabramson.com. So we were talking before the break, Dr. Abramson, about parents and bullying, and also about the difference between snacks and treats. I liked in your book how you talked about how you think of foods like traffic lights, and I wondered if you could share that with our listeners.
Yeah, that's not original. I can't claim credit for that. But for younger kids, I think it's helpful to talk about red lights, yellow lights, and green lights. And green lights are foods that are not calorically dense, so this would typically be fruits and vegetables, beans, lean chicken, fish, etc. Yellow foods or yellow light foods are foods that are high in nutritional value but are calorically dense. So, you know, that we would put some limits on cheeses, red meats, things along those lines. And, of course, the red light foods are foods that are calorically dense but don't have a lot of nutritional value. And here are the typical junk foods, you know, ding-dongs, ho-hos, etc.
Twinkies,
yeah, my all-time favorite Twinkies.
Yes, the ones that can last in your pantry for 20 years.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the biggest mistake that parents make when they're trying to help their children with their weight?
Well, I think parents frequently will, again, focus on dieting. And I tell parents to banish that word from their vocabulary. We don't have to use that word, but rather we can talk about healthy eating. And the nice thing about healthy eating is that's something that would benefit everybody. So it doesn't have the stigma attached to it that a diet does. Even skinny kids would benefit from healthy eating. I think that the biggest mistake is to focus just on dieting. But other things that I think are unhelpful are when parents or teachers or, uncles, aunts, whomever, make well-meaning comments that are supposed to be humorous about a child's weight. Frequently they will think they're doing this for the child's own good. But it really does impact the child's self-esteem, and that's not very helpful.
Yeah, there was a large study, Diane Newmark Stainer's Project EAT study. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but she talked about one of the markers of future disordered eating was being teased by a family member or peers.
Exactly. You know, sometimes one parent was telling me that they brought their daughter in to see the pediatrician, and she was a bit overweight, and the pediatrician said, you really need to go on a diet. And then at the next visit, several months later, the kid was almost anorexic.
Yeah.
Sometimes a simple comment will really trigger extreme dieting behavior with really negative consequences.
Well, of course, working with eating disorders, I see that a lot. I had one patient with bulimia whose dad used to, jokingly call her Miss Piggy.
There we go.
Yeah, and, I'm sure in his mind he was trying to get her to focus some awareness on this, but it certainly wasn't helpful in terms of what later happened. And I also see one mistake that I think is huge is where a parent will pick on one child because of their weight. So mm-hmm. maybe they have two daughters and one daughter takes after the thinner parent and one takes mm-hmm. after the heavier parent. And they will kind of make that child the identified patient, so to speak, in the family.
Yeah.
So everything revolves around, getting that child to lose weight. And I think
it's interesting how sometimes conflicts that are below the surface tend to emerge or crystallize around issues of weight. Maybe the parent is unhappy with the child for some other reason, but the simplest thing to talk about is the child's weight.
Or maybe the parent is unhappy in their marriage or at their job. It may have nothing to do with the child,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, it could be the child's weight becomes a source, the focus for almost any type of frustration in the family.
Yeah. So in your book, you talk about 10 steps that will help your child to a healthy weight. So how do you, for example, get your child to eat vegetables? I was talking to a colleague who's a medical doctor, and she struggled with her weight all her life, and she has a son who's, slightly overweight or overweight, and she can, has tried to force him, cajole him, bribe him.
Didn't work.
No, and none of those worked.
I think the first thing to recognize is that when a kid refuses vegetables or, for that matter, any new food, it may not be that the child is just being stubborn or willful. We're born liking sweet tastes, and we really have to learn to like anything, foods that aren't sweet. And that's part of our biological makeup. It's not because we're being difficult. And so recognizing that, I always tell parents, if a child refuses to eat vegetables, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't go into lectures or threats or cajoling or bribing. Back off and try again next week. Sometimes it takes 10 or 15 or maybe even more repetitions before a child will actually try a new food. And so there's no point in making this a source of conflict. One thing that parents can do, in addition, is to actually enjoy the foods themselves. I mean, if they're having dinner with a child and the child sees mom and dad really getting into, you know, the carrots or, you know, whatever the vegetable is, it's more likely that he or she will be curious about, you know, what mom and dad seem to be enjoying.
Now, sadly, many parents haven't been, you know, many parents have weight issues themselves, and they haven't been in the habit of eating in a healthy way. So they're trying to tell their kids to do something that they are not doing, and that
doesn't
work. Yeah,
I mean, this is really an example of you've got to walk the walk. You can't just talk the talk. Mm-hmm. You know, the same is true with exercise. You can't tell your kid to go out and run around while you're sitting on the sofa. But, you know, the other thing that I will sometimes tell parents about eating vegetables or other new foods is to have the child help prepare them. You know, on a Saturday afternoon, if you're making dinner and you've got a recipe for a vegetable dish, ask the child to help you in the kitchen and cut up the vegetables or, you know, do whatever to prepare the dish. And then when it's dinner time and the dish is served, it's much more likely that the child is going to want to try something that he or she has been helping with.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other big issues in terms of reaching a healthy weight has to do with activity. And I read in your book that you actually were a kid and maybe even a teenager or maybe a young adult.
I plead guilty to having been a kid.
An exercise avoider, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was really bad about that, I have to admit. When I was
impressed with the clever ways you found to get out of exercise, like offering to do something else during gym class to help.
Yeah, I volunteered to take attendance during the gym class. So I actually didn't have to do anything that was physically active. Mm-hmm. And when I was, I think it was fifth or sixth grade, and my dad tried to sign me up for Little League Baseball, and I complained and threw a fit, and eventually he backed off and we just went home.
What could your parents have done differently to get you to exercise?
Well, one thing that would have been nice, you know, my folks were both very busy, but it would have been nice if we had done something together as a family. I mean, we all had bicycles. We could have, gone for bike rides or played ball together, something along those lines. You know, my dad liked to hike, but, typically he did that with one of his pals, and it probably would have been better if it was more of a family outing.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things that parents can do to encourage their children to exercise more and to get off the couch?
Yeah, I think one of the simplest things, American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that for kids, 2 hours of screen time should be a sufficient limit. And many parents don't even attempt to limit the amount of time that kids spend with television or sitting at the computer. Mm-hmm. And, even if the child doesn't follow perfectly, it's helpful. I think there's evidence that just saying, okay, 2 hours a day is the max, and, trying to enforce it, even if it's not done perfectly, has a beneficial effect.
And I think kids are no different than adults in terms of sometimes using TV and video games to distract them from emotions or problems they have. And we're going to go to break in just a little bit. But when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about school-based programs, because there's been a big push in our country, even from the White House on down, about how to deal with childhood obesity. So I'm here with my guest, Dr. Ed Abramson. We'll be back on the Vital Life Radio in just a moment.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have your resolutions to lose weight fallen flat? Get serious about reaching your healthy weight and actually changing your relationship with food and your body once and for all. The Anchor Weight Management Program, developed by Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, is a unique whole-person approach to restoring your healthy body weight without sacrificing your joy in eating. This is a medically supervised, effective, safe, and realistic program. There are ongoing programs in the Denver area, or you can do the program at your own pace, in the privacy of your own home. For more information or to register, call 303-993-5468. That's 303-993-5468.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
When you were young, did you feel free to daydream? Were you full of questions such as why, how, and what if? Did you allow yourself to be carefree, to dance and sing? Did you create just for fun? Want to feel that way again? Reclaim your natural curiosity and creativity with Dr. Carol Stalka on Stargazing Stories, Sparking Your Creativity. Revitalize your life, work, and relationships. Be more playful, be bold, imagine, explore, and live more creatively every day. Tune in Wednesdays at 11 a.m. in the East, 8 a.m. in the West on Seventh Wave Network.
Steps to a Healthier You. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential with your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. If you have a question for Dr. Ross or her guests today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. If you prefer to send an email, you can reach Dr. Ross at vitalliferadio@gmail.com. Now back to The Vital Life.
Welcome back to The Vital Life. Our sponsor is Princess Know-It-All, www.princessknowitall.com. And our guest today is Dr. Ed Abramson. We're talking about his latest book, It's Not Just Baby Fat, 10 Steps to Help Your Child to a Healthy Weight. And this is a great little book. If you're a parent and you're thinking, oh my goodness, I couldn't read a whole book on this topic, you'll be surprised. It's really a very quick read and has extremely useful advice. So it's something that you can pick up and read very fast. And if you want to find out more about the book, you can go to the website www.itsnotjustbabyfat.com. And on that site, you can also find that CDC calculator to determine if your child is at risk for being obese or overweight. So, Dr. Abramson, I wanted to find out, what is your opinion about the school-based programs to deal with childhood obesity?
You know, it's a mixed bag. There have been some horror stories where the nurses or in a school have actually done, like, public weigh-ins of the kids, which I imagine would be incredibly humiliating. On the other hand, there is a lot that schools can do to help fight the obesity epidemic, and it really is an epidemic that is potentially is going to be a real disaster. I mean, about a third of kids in the U.S. are overweight or obese. The incidence of type 2 diabetes, I think, has increased like tenfold in the last decade. So we could be confronting a major public health problem here without it, if we don't kind of do something about it. So school is a good place to start. And some of the things that I think have been beneficial is that in some school districts, for instance, they've taken out the vending machines that have soda and junk foods and substituted more healthy snacks. And a certain amount of nutrition education, I think, is helpful, and, of course, physical activity. But unfortunately, you know, when money gets tight, sometimes gym is one of the first things that they cut back on.
Yeah, many schools no longer have PE in, you know, in the younger grades, and I think that's a shame because kids are sitting all day, and many of them have difficulty being, you know, being still for 6-8 hours a day and get diagnosed with ADHD.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I don't like to sit all day. I don't know about.
I don't think anybody does. I think it's an unrealistic expectation that we have of our kids.
Yeah, you know, and I think parents can, in addition to the school base, parents can look at how they can increase just ordinary movement during the course of the day. It doesn't even have to be exercise or playing sports, but just walking or going up the stairs or you know, moving around instead of, you know, just sitting and watching. Really what we want to do is to get kids moving as opposed to being sedentary.
Well, what's been interesting to me is some of the newer research that's showing that childhood obesity actually starts before birth. So what a child, you know, what a fetus is being fed through the mother can affect their risk for obesity. And you also talk in your book about the breastfeeding advantage. So what are your thoughts about those two?
Yeah, well, first of all, we need to recognize that there is at least a genetic component. I mean, we may inherit a tendency to gain weight more easily, or we may inherit a tendency to be hungrier sooner. So there is a genetic component to it. But there do seem to be some effects of the intrauterine environment. And certainly what happens early on in life is important. For instance, there's evidence that breastfeeding is protective against childhood obesity. And it may be, if nothing else, I mean, there probably are several reasons why that's the case, but if a child is breastfed, the child gets accustomed to having different tastes, depending, of course, on what mom has been eating. On the other hand, if a child has been bottle-fed, the child experiences the same taste day in and day out. And so as the child gets older, if he or she has had the experience of different tastes, it may be easier to introduce new foods to the child, as opposed to if a child has had only one taste throughout infancy, then they may be more resistant to trying new foods.
So it's really important that women who are pregnant make a concerted effort to eat more healthily for the sake of their children. I also saw or talked to someone from Sweden, I believe it was, and they say in that country they consciously feed their babies Swedish yogurt, which is very sour. You know, it's not like our yogurt, which has been, you know, you put a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah.
But it's very sour, and they do that for the express purpose of changing their taste so they won't crave sweets as much.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting idea, to introduce a sour taste early on in life.
Mm-hmm. I also have seen that many children are becoming obese even at the age of 2 years old. How do we explain that? I mean, most of the time kids, you know, have their own internal monitor of how much to eat and what not to eat. So how could a two-year-old become overweight or obese?
Well, more than likely, mom is interpreting the child's crying as hunger when, in fact, the child may be crying because, you know, the diaper needs to be changed or she's cold or something scared him or something like that. But mom hears the crying and then, you know, provides a bottle or feeds the child.
Mm-hmm. Are there other times in a child's development where the risk for weight gain or is higher? I know you talk about puberty causing weight issues for girls, but not necessarily for boys.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. When a boy is, let's say he's the first one in his group to reach puberty, and so now, you know, he's got facial hair and his voice is changing, he kind of becomes the leader of the pack because he's mature. He's starting to be more manly than, you know, his childish peers. On the other hand, when a girl is the first one in her group to reach puberty, she has a newly rounded shape, and she may misinterpret that as fat and become self-conscious. And, you know, if she really does see that as just as getting fat, then she may go on a diet and maybe even do, you know, really restrictive kinds of dieting behaviors. And then wear kind of bulky clothes to hide her newly rounded form and feel bad about it.
It seems that in our families, there's not much conversation about, you know, normal growth and development. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about my sons who were, you know, chunky when they went into puberty. And when we went at one time, went to shop for school clothes, and one of my sons had to get husky clothes. And he said, he looked at me and said, "Mom, does this mean that I'm fat?" And lucky for me, I had, this wasn't my first, you know, child. And so I had a ready answer because I had been down that road before. And I did give him some education. Well, this is what your brothers went through, and this is how our family grows, and it's normal. And, you know, and he was okay with it, and it didn't seem to affect his self-esteem. But it seems that many parents either don't understand normal growth and development, or their pediatricians are, you know, giving them the message, your child is fat, so they need to diet. So when an expert tells a parent that, what's the best way to handle that? Or tells a child that?
It's a tough spot to be in. You know, one thing I always encourage parents to do, parents of girls, is to explain the changes that come with puberty well before they get there. And girls are reaching puberty at younger and younger ages.
Some as young as 9.
Yeah. No, that's not unheard of at all. And so I think, you know, having a discussion about that beforehand, I think, is very helpful. And, you know, recognize that, again, children grow at different paces, and you really want to focus on what the child is doing rather than the child's weight. So if the child is active and seems to be eating a healthy diet, then, you know, I wouldn't get too concerned about it. On the other hand, if the weight seems to be a result of excessive snacking and junk food eating, you know, then maybe it's time to look at changing some of that.
Is it important for parents to limit sort of junk foods or treats in the home? In other words, don't buy that stuff that, you know, is not so healthy, or only buy it infrequently. How would you set up your house to make it healthier?
Yeah, I think that's really an important point, because we really need to structure the home environment to produce the kind of eating that we want to see. And so, you know, I tell parents, you know, try not to have that food in the house. You know, if dad has to have, you know, a brownie or something like that, rather than buy the brownies, dad can, you know, have a brownie on his lunch break at work. And so you don't have to keep it in the house. If you do have to have snack foods or junk foods, dessert or whatever, I think it's helpful to buy single serving. So rather than, for instance, buying a half gallon of ice cream, buy an ice cream, you know, a box of ice cream sandwiches or ice cream cups or something like that, so you know what the portion size is, because a lot of times the problem is in controlling portion size. People tend to eat more when the portion is not really well defined. And so if you have a half gallon of ice cream, there's no place, you know, that tells you it's time to stop.
And many people feel that a big bowl of ice cream is a normal serving.
Yeah.
Whereas it's really a cup, which is a very small amount. Well, we're going to be going to break here pretty soon. And when we come back with Dr. Ed Abramson, we'll be continuing to talk about childhood obesity and the things you can do to help your child reach a healthy weight on the Vital Life Radio.
opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have your resolutions to lose weight fallen flat? Get serious about reaching your healthy weight and actually changing your relationship with food and your body once and for all. The Anchor Weight Management Program, developed by Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, is a unique whole-person approach to restoring your healthy body weight without sacrificing your joy in eating. This is a medically supervised, effective, safe, and realistic program. There are ongoing programs in the Denver area, or you can do the program at your own pace, in the privacy of your own home. For more information or to register, call 303-993-5468. That's 303-993-5468.
If you are a first-year mom or maybe a mother-to-be, tune in every week for From Here to Maternity. Your host, Janet Markovitz, will answer some of those questions that others won't. Learn what to ask your professional and when to ask it. We'll take a look at the latest products for new moms and future moms. We're here to support you and answer your questions in this special and sometimes difficult time. From Here to Maternity is broadcast live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Steps to a Healthier You. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential with your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. If you have a question for Dr. Ross or her guests today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. If you prefer to send an email, you can reach Dr. Ross at vitalliferadio@gmail.com. Now back to The Vital Life.
Welcome back. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Ed Abramson, and we've been talking about childhood obesity and his new book, It's Not Just Baby Fat, 10 Steps to Help Your Child to a Healthy Weight. So, Dr. Abramson, I just had a few more questions, and I know that one of your first books was on emotional eating, and many of our children are experiencing a lot of stress, it seems. And I wonder, how can a parent help their child who they know or see is overeating because of their emotions or because of their stress?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is for a parent to not use food. You know, lots of times we use food as a reward or as a treat after a kid has had an unpleasant experience, you know, gone to the dentist and or gotten an injection at the doctor's office, and to kind of console the child, we head to Baskin Robbins, and that's not too helpful. And so I think that's kind of a background. But lots of times, I think a parent can just simply ask a child, "Are you really hungry, or are you just kind of sad or not feeling, you know, too happy?" And the child will sometimes be able to make the distinction between eating from hunger versus eating just to soothe oneself or make oneself feel better.
Is it useful if, you know, because sometimes children aren't real sure in the moment what they feel. Is it useful to say to them, well, before we get the ice cream, let's just go for a walk or to do something else with them, and then if you still want the ice cream, we'll get that?
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent idea. You know, frequently we can find other activities to substitute for eating. The child may just want some nurturing and, you know, or attention from mom or dad. Mm-hmm. Maybe playing a game or going for a walk or doing something that has mom or dad's undivided attention may be better than having an ice cream.
Mm-hmm. And I know for boys, it's often hard for them to talk about their feelings unless they are involved in an activity. I read somewhere that, you know, if you go out and play ball with your son, then he's more likely to talk to you than if you're just sitting on the couch.
Yeah, you know, when I was when my kids were young, frequently when we were out for a walk or just even driving in the car one-on-one, you know, to run an errand of some sort, then you know, I ask an open-ended question, and my son or my daughter would tell me kind of what's going on in school today, and we could talk about how that felt. And I think that was a lot better than, you know, offering
a treat,
ding-dongs, you know, because you're feeling kind of sad.
Right.
You know, in on my website, on the itsnotjustbabyfat.com, there are a bunch of hints, helpful techniques, I think, that parents can use to help their kids with the tendency to be emotional eaters or to the reluctance to eat vegetables or some of the things we've been talking about this morning.
Yeah, I think that's a good resource for parents. One of the other things I just wanted to mention is that there's a fair amount of research now that sleep deprivation in children can be as strongly associated with the risk for obesity.
Yeah, it's not actually just with kids. With adults, too, sleep deprivation seems to be associated with weight gain. Whether there's a physiological underlying reason for that or whether it's just that when people are feeling stressed and worn out and tired, they may use food to try and boost their energy level is not clear. But there does seem to be a definite link between sleep deprivation and weight gain. So the moral of the story is to make sure that your kid is getting enough sleep.
And it seems that I know I read one study that showed that a child's sleep pattern, you know, a young child's sleep pattern can almost foolproof be a predictor of their later weight. And I know many parents don't value sleep for themselves, and this may be part of the problem. And children are very overscheduled with activities and, you know, expectations. So how much sleep should a child who's like in, you know, elementary school be getting?
Yeah, you know, there are recommendations for a newborn somewhere between 10 to 18 hours, preschooler 11 to 13 hours, a kid 5 to 12 years of age, maybe 10 to 11 hours. For teens, it's particularly difficult because they are programmed to stay up later and to sleep in, but frequently, you know, they have to be at school at 8 o'clock, and so they're staying up late but then getting up early and not getting the 8 or 9 hours sleep that they ideally should have.
And I think for adults that it's 7 to 9 hours minimum to reduce the risk for obesity. One of the other things that is in your book is mindful eating, and we talk a lot about this in adults, especially those who have eating disorders. But what does mindful eating for children look like?
You know, again, it's really focusing on the experience. You know, we tend to eat with the TV on while we're driving in the car. You know, it's rushed, it's snacked, and we really lose sight of what it is that we're doing. And I think there's every reason for us to really pay attention, to stop, focus on our eating, and to enjoy the food and recognize the sensations that the food provides so we know when to stop.
So is mindful eating more of eating meals around a table with the family? Because I know Newmark Sainer's Project Eat, she also said that eating at least one or two meals a week was helped reduce the likelihood of eating disorders. Is it about eating with the family, or is it about enjoying the meal more? Or what is the benefit of this mindful eating for kids?
All of the above.
Okay.
Eating with family meals, unfortunately, are disappearing, and it's one of the nicest rituals. It's, you know, I tell parents, this is not the time to bring up to discuss the bad report card or the chores that weren't done. Mealtime should be a pleasant experience, a time to share the day's activities, and to enjoy the food and the good feelings that come from it with your family.
Yeah. So mindful eating is really about experiencing the food and experiencing the social aspect of eating as well.
Yeah, as opposed to gobbling, rushing, or eating while, you know, watching TV. I always tell parents to turn off the TV when it's dinner time.
Yeah, and that's a hard one for many people to do.
Yeah.
Well, we just have a minute left, and I wondered if you had any other tips about helping improve how kids feel about their bodies. We've talked a little bit about, focusing on other things.
Even if the child is overweight, parents can find something about the child's appearance that they value. Even if the child really is obese, maybe he has a nice smile or she has pretty eyes or they dress nicely. And so there's nothing to be gained by making a child feel badly about his or her body. It doesn't help with weight loss. We want the child to feel good about her body so that she doesn't develop an eating disorder. And actually that may help in sticking to some kind of reasonable eating plan. I've got, I've got more hints on the It's Not Just Baby Fat website, as well as a link to the CDC calculator for parents to figure out if their kid is too heavy.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much for being on the program, and that's about all the time that we have today. So I wanted to thank our guest, Dr. Ed Abramson, and remind you his book is called It's Not Just Baby Fat. I also want to thank our sponsor, Princess Know-It-All and the Noble Food Makeover. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross, and next week I'll be with you with Dr. Michael Murray, who's a naturopathic physician who is a specialist in nutrition and health, and he'll be talking to you about how what you eat can heal you or make you sick. So until then, I wish you good health and vitality.
We hope you've enjoyed listening this week to The Vita Life, Awakening Your Full Potential. Please be sure to join Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross again next Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until then, have a vital week.